Podcast. This episode, we are talking about exchange-traded funds and different strategies that you can use. So, Gareth, over the last couple of years, I think they've really taken off. The old Barefoot Investors definitely give them a good plug as a way to safely invest. My best friend.
Firstly, I actually thought they were equity traded funds for many years.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, up until
keep on correcting
10
me.
10 minutes ago.
No, it was probably about 2 hours ago. But by the 15th time of me saying equity traded funds and you going, no, it's actually exchange traded funds. I've decided to call them exchange traded funds.
Gareth's on board.
Yeah, woohoo. They're really popular. I suppose they're a really safe way for people to get into investing.
Which is an easy way.
And it's why people like the Barefoot Investor, because his whole approach is about, you know, getting people on board and getting people in a very kind of safe and manageable way investing. So for sure, when you look at them and someone says to you, hey, you know, how would you like to invest in the S&P 500? It's gone up, an average of 14% year on year in the last 10 years or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, hey, invest in that and you're going to get a 14% return. Awesome. So on face value, they look really good. I think we're going to delve into a little bit today, Phil, on the reality of them, I suppose, you know, what different types of funds there are out there, what sort of strategies you need to follow. And then hopefully at the end, we can kind of make a call on whether we think they really are worthwhile or not. And if they are worthwhile, what percentage of your portfolio should you be
going at?
Because that's exactly, and that's what we do with everything, is that's the important thing. There's no single strategy, as you guys have learned. And hopefully you're learning through our podcast and through any of the courses we have. There's no single strategy to actually getting into investing and to setting up investing. There's different ways to do things. So, question one. What is an equity trade? No, I'm going to What is an exchange traded fund?
So the best way to think of an exchange traded fund, I think, is reverse it. It's a fund traded on the exchange. So
that doesn't help me, Phil.
Okay. Well, for most people, I thought that it helped.
But
what it is, it's like that. It's no different to like a mini fund or a hedge fund in a way that they pull together all these different stocks. It's just that these stocks have a commonality. So they might be like small cap stocks in Australia.
Yep.
And they're all, whereas a managed fund, that could be small cap stock in Australia, large cap US, a growth company in the UK. These all have that similar kind of theme that they pull together. And they generally, so it might be industry based. It might be resource-based companies in the UK, for example.
Sure.
So they're just pulling together a whole heap of different companies, stocks, and making them into a fund. Now, I'll go into a bit more detail.
Thank you.
Because there's, because the reason it works well is, let's say you have $1,000 and you want to buy the top 10 companies in the US. So you're not going to get very far. I think Amazon alone is like $2,000. So you're not going to be able to do that. So what happens is, let's say a wealthy person, her name's Jane, she goes through and buys each one of those 10 companies.
Yep.
And she buys lots of them. But let's say she goes and buys one each and it costs her $10,000. She then creates a company and then sells shares in that company. So she might sell shares, or not shares, like units, in that company, and then you can buy those. So she might sell something for 50 cents.
Sure.
So that way, your $1,000, you can buy $1,000 and 50 cents. So you end up with 2,000 units or shares in her company.
Sure.
Now, the way it works is because all her assets are the same assets of the top 10 companies in the US, it's going to perform the same.
Yes.
So that's common sense. Way that exchange traded funds work.
Sure. So they're all managed funds.
In a way, the management, they don't.
It's not like
they don't
buy
and sell
funds.
All the time.
Yeah, okay.
They just say, you know, there's top 10 companies in the US, that's it.
But some organization or group has to put them together, like Vanguard, S&P 500, so Vanguard.
Yeah, they have to pull them together, select them.
Has put them together to group them into a single sort of entity.
They do, yeah, they group them together. But again, the difference is managed fund, they'll buy and sell in a short period of time.
Yeah.
Exchange traded fund is more going to be, this is top 10 in the US, that's it. They might change it once a year if that top 10 switches around, but generally it's kind of passive management.
So, random question. We were talking about Berkshire Hathaway because we've just got an email from Stake, who are one of our sort of partners, some of the guys we work with. They've got a really good app for investing. And they're just talking about an opportunity to buy into Berkshire Hathaway. Is Berkshire Hathaway then an ETF? Because aren't they a company that, or is it completely separate to the fact that they own part of Netflix, part of iTunes, part of Apple, part of, you know, Pepsi, or sorry, part of Coke, I should say. Where do they sit at all? Are they a completely separate entity or whatever?
Yeah, they are a separate entity. My understanding is, and I never got this completely, I think they started out as like a managed fund. Because I know Buffett always gave 6%. they'd earn, I think it was 6%, and then they'd take 20% of anything above that.
Okay.
That's how they worked out. But the fact that you can buy shares in it is, yeah, kind of a similar way. They go through and they buy 5% of Apple, and then you buy shares in that company that has 5% of Apple as well. So yeah, it's kind of a similar type of setup, but they're more about buying whole businesses or acquiring big percentages of it.
Yeah.
Whereas funds don't, exchange traded funds don't really do that. They kind of get a good spread among a whole heap of different ones, whereas Buffett's like, let's go big on five.
And so that's the sort of benefit. Well, I suppose firstly, to buy into the Berkshire Hathaway A stock, is it over 300 grand per stock? It's the most expensive stock in the world. So realistically, most people can't actually get into that. So yeah, the ETFs are, I suppose, a way for people to buy in pretty cheaply. With Stake, for example, the guys we're with, they require a $50 minimum.
Just deposit into there.
Yeah, deposits. Yeah, so, sorry, deposits. It's not even purchase, sorry, it's just the deposit. And then you can put as little as you want into ETFs. So with ETFs then, we've talked about the fact that they are a group of different companies. They operate in the same way, as in you get the money back once they're, you know, every year, if it's a 14% growth, you get that 14%.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, you get the same 14% growth. Yep, same thing. Dividends will go back in and distributed, if that's what it's set up to do.
Yep.
It's just a cash out period. They're generally more liquid in a daily sort of basis.
Okay.
Whereas some managed funds or hedge funds or mutual funds, they might have only two or three periods during the year where you can cash out because they want to build a more strategic kind of portfolio.
I get you. So I guess since they're more passive, like, are they more passive?
Oh, they're massive.
Yeah. So when we talk about the managed fund thing, there's massive passive. Hey, that's good. The massive passive.
Massive passive.
The massive passive stock investor. So they really are one which we, yeah, you sort of put the money in. I'm thinking long term. We'll get into strategy. So you know what I mean. But to me, I get a sense they're more sort of a long term investment than they are a shorter term return. I mean, it's unlikely because you've got, and correct me for a moment, because you've got such a spread of different companies.
Yeah.
Different companies are doing well and not well at different times. There is a sort of a leveling out. Possibly,
yeah, and 10's probably a bad example. I mean, there's some that have 200.
Well, the S&P 500, the Vanguard S&P 500? That is 500.
It's all 500 stocks.
So they bought stocks in 500 companies.
Well, it depends if it's an ETF or if it's an index fund, but potentially, yeah, they've bought stocks in.
Wow.
But when we talk of billions.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Okay. Yes. So yes, but because there is the S&P 500, which would be 500 companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. On that, what sort of examples? So, for people that are looking at it, it's not just funds that are indexed to stock markets. There are lots of different type of ETFs, aren't there? There's ones that are riskier than others. Like you said, it is just people that come together. They group together a group of companies, which sometimes have a connection, or most of the time have a connection, sometimes may not. But I know there's things like tech ETFs, there's pot stocks, so cannabis ETFs, which would probably be a little bit risky. There's emerging markets is a big one. There's obviously the main sort of markets, so the American markets, and for the Aussie people, there's all the sort of Aussie market stuff. What sort of range of different ones are there out there, just to give a bit of an example to people?
Well, it can be almost.
Oh, I've done it. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it can be different.
Can we set one up?
If we wanted to. Mm. I mean, there wouldn't be any reason why we wouldn't. I'd rather go with Buffett structure. And they buy shares in our company and we just do the research. And
yeah, actually, I'm with you. We should have a chat with Buffett about that.
Or
Warren, as I like to call him. I'm sure. I'm sure he's desperately trying to get a hold of you, Phil. I'm sure he's a medical because of. Perhaps just give him a call back. Yeah, he does need a bit of help.
He needs help with his IPOs. He doesn't get involved. He's a loser.
So there's basically anything and everything out there. So as an investor, as someone who's getting into the market, don't think ETFs are just for the stock markets and are a little bit boring. You know, there is potential opportunity in terms of what types of different groups of companies and groups of businesses that are out there. Obviously, there's risks associated with it, with investing in any way, but if you're investing in emerging markets, there's the same risks that we've talked about on different podcasts around investing in places like India and China. All those risks apply to ETFs. So ETFs don't remove that risk, but I suppose what they do is they give some insulation, because what you have is a group of companies. So the idea being that if 2/3 of the companies within that portfolio aren't going great, if the other if the other third are going really well, there's a bit of balance, so you can kind of balance
and
it.
And that's,
so
that's one of the challenges, because you can go through and you don't get a say over the individual stocks.
No,
you might you know, in Australia you might have Telstra and you might get you know, like iiNet or TPG.
Yep.
And Telstra might be going down this way,
yeah.
And the other ones are growing that, and they cancel each other out. But overall, you've got exposure to a telecommunications
yep.
sort of ETF as a way to explain it. So, and that's one of the downsides of diversity that no one really talks about, is it just brings out mediocrity, because you're both you're buying both winners and losers at the same time.
Well, that's
right. And it just comes out as sort of an average.
But I'd imagine they are a favorite of brokers, because they are, if you put them in the right area, that they are relatively safe. Like the returns, so if we talk about a 14% return, for example, right, from the S&P 500. Now, you compare that against what you're getting from the banks. Do you know what I mean? Like, I suppose for a lot of people that are getting in, they might be wooed by that idea that, oh, wow, I can get this on average 14% return. Now, you know, that's not obviously every year, that's a kind of an averaged out system, but there is a lot of niceness in that idea. And really, for most people, if they're investing in, say, the US stock exchange or the ASX, they'll get a comfort that it's not going to disappear forever, as opposed to if you're investing in a single company, you don't know. In a couple of weeks' time, that company could end up going bust or whatever.
Yeah, so I don't know if stockbrokers or financial professionals like them a lot, well, back in the old day, because they don't get a lot of commission, because there's not a lot of money from it. Not like Wolf of Wall Street's, where you get 50% on your pink slip penny stocks.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jordan, we're still trying to get Jordan, if you're out there, get in touch with us. We're still trying to get you on the podcast.
You've got to respond to Cardone.
You were keen. Cardone was give me shit. So yeah, make sure you get on board.
We'll get him on one day.
Okay. So that's
for an honest financial planner, it's an easy sell.
Top it's an easy sell. Correct. As part of a portfolio of stocks.
Yeah, yeah.
And for people investing, so we've sort of touched on it, but for people investing themselves, particularly starter investors, there is a benefit, because you're not having to continually trade. So you can have this money and you're not having to then spend fees on somebody who's continually trading. You can put it into the market on a fairly good, comfortable level that over a longer period of time, I'm talking over 5 years, really, 5 to 10 years or more, you will see pretty good returns coming back. So I suppose in that sense, I'm putting lots of pretty good and, you know, okay.
No,
that's right. No, absolutely. But I'm purposely doing that because I'm making the point that it is sort of like that. It is a safety net, but the returns are okay. They're not great. And we know there's other ways to make great returns that if you use your education knowledge, you can do. But from the learner investor perspective, I could understand the benefit of these, because you say, great, I put them in, I'm not having to spend a lot of fees to try and get
it going. Well, it's a good point you raise. It comes back to that, are you an active investor or passive? Because if you're passive, the best thing you can do is commit to you know, S&P 500, invest $400 a month and leave it for 20 years.
Yep.
You'll probably come up with, you know, something close to $1 million at the end.
Yep.
And just don't check it, don't watch it, just keep putting that $400 in every month and just sort of leave it. Over the long term, it works out like a bank account on steroids.
Yeah,
it's just for those people that enjoy going through that process and that research and finding that company. And even if they just beat the market by 0.5%, the fact that you've done that on your own is kind of what they're chasing more so than the actual reward. It's a good question to sort of ask. You know, are you passive or are you more active in your investments? Good learning curve too.
I would say, you know, ETFs play into both areas. So if you're active, you know, I think it's always worth, and we've always spoken about having some level of safety net. You know, we would never say risk all your money in the things that could double or triple your money, because, you know, there is an element of risk in there. So it's always worth having a bit of a backup. So always having that in the background. So for me, there's that about percentages, which again we'll talk about at the end.
Yeah.
But then for the more passive investor, you're right. They might say 70 or 80% of my portfolio is based on a couple of these big ETFs that I know are bringing in money. It's okay returns, but I'm not having to do a huge amount on it. And then I might play with 10 or 15 or 20%. So definitely, I think this is one thing that should form part of any portfolio, I would say. Maybe you disagree with me on that. You probably don't have it in yours.
Again, it depends on the individual. And mine flips depending on the time that I have. Like, I like doing active investing, but I don't get to do it as much detail.
Yeah.
Just trying to do it up cheeky investor at the moment. So I have a bit in the ETF, but it probably goes into one of our first strategies. where you can, and it's probably obvious, but you can get some real good diversification in the fact that you can buy an ETF that's top 50 companies on the the FTSE, the UK market, Financial Times. You can buy it in the NASDAQ, you can buy it New York Stock Exchange, you can buy it in Australia, you can buy it in Germany. And if you have 20% in each, then you've got an internationally diverse portfolio. You're just buying the top 50 companies in each one of those countries. And that's one of the beauties of ETF. You don't have to go through and try and buy
them individually. Yeah, that's actually a good point. It is for people who aren't, the all active passive. So people who don't really actively want to be learning and educating themselves, they probably just want sort of a bit of a lazy sort of investment in a way, from what I can see. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's what it is. It's, I think definitely it is. You put it in, you leave it. I know you've spoken before, and it's absolutely true. Gone are the days where you just leave money in forever. Gone are the days where, someone in management in a company like my granddad did was just handed a load of shares of Smurfits, which became very valuable. And, 50 years later, my parents end up benefiting from that. Gone are those days, it's, you can't really do that. Yeah. So even the ETFs, at some point in 5-10 years, absolutely, it fluctuates, and you may want to look at other things. Anyway, that's given a bit of a sense of what they are, how they work, and how people can use them. I suppose the interesting part of it, like all of this to do with investing, is strategies.
Yeah.
And it's what kind of strategies, Phil, can be played in when it comes to.
So that first one I mentioned, the international diversification. Yep. It's always a good strategy to get outside your sort of country that you're in. The other one is it gives you really good risk exposure. Like you can, in a weird way, because people think that they're safe, you can expose yourself to a bit of risk. So you might have the top 500 companies, and that's in the US, and that's 90% of your portfolio.
Yep.
And you might whack 10% of your portfolio on small cap companies in India.
Yep.
Knowing that the India market's growing, but then to actually go in there and to analyze each individual stock and see how they're perceived in the marketplace and put a value on them, you say, I'm going to put $10,000 into this ETF. Yep. And that gives you exposure to that area.
Okay.
So, you can actually do some risky investments without having to go through the individual ones.
Sure.
The other thing they do really well is a strategy called sector rotation. So that's where you make sure your portfolio kind of represents the economy.
Yep.
So when things are going really, really well, stocks like Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, the growth tech companies do really well. So, buying that in 2010, just buying ETFs across the world, or even in your own country, that had tech funds, it just dominate anything else. And then you switch it over when you think the market's starting to go backwards. You're like, you sell it up, and then you buy into something that's more defensive, or more conservative, or resource, or telecommunication, or utilities-based. And that way you keep alternating between the two, which is a lot different just to buying the top 500 and saying, let's ride this out forever, because they're liquid, you can sell all them and then get exposure to more defensive stocks.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting one, actually. So there is a couple of ways to explore it, more than I thought, to be honest, in terms of
it's way more complex than a lot of people think.
Safe.
And the other one is just the market cap. So that's the size of the company.
Yeah.
Just to give you an overview, market cap, anything under $2 billion, is small cap, 2 to 10 bill is mid, and 10 bill is large or blue chip. And I think they've brought out a new one, anything over sort of, I think, 200 mils, like a mega.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they go down, they go into like micro caps. And,
okay.
But they're the three main sort of ones. So again, if you want to access some small cap stocks in whatever market, there's one popular one called the Russell 2000 index, or Russell 3000 index, sorry. And it takes the 3,000 stocks in America, and then just invest in the smaller ones working backwards.
Oh.
So the S&P 500 goes from 1 to 500. These guys go backwards.
From 3,000 to whatever, zero. Yeah. Okay, so would that include, just as a matter of interest, would that include some of the S&P 500 stocks? Do you know?
No, because it doesn't, I don't think it goes all the way backwards.
So there's over 3,500 companies based that are on the stock market.
Oh, there's a massive amount.
There's probably a lot more than that, to be honest, thinking about it.
Yeah, and their aim is to weigh those smaller ones that are just coming in.
Yeah.
Which the logic behind that is, I think the process of a stock, it's got to start sort of small, then grow most of the time. So you think Tesla, it's about $50 billion at the moment, but it would have launched at maybe $10 billion. So getting those smaller ones when they're early, that's where the growth is.
Yeah.
It's not so much that top 10, once they get to the top 10, the growth isn't as far.
No, that's
so
true.
It's kind of taking advantage of that growth path that it's.
And is that going so? Into. So just out of interest, with that, The benefit is you're protecting yourself across a range of companies, but obviously you're not going to make as much if you're investing in individual companies. But is that something that you, being someone that is passionate about investing in the process, and I know you're really into the growth investing side, is something like that index, is that something that you would do? Is that something that you would actually recommend to people to do?
I've never done it myself. I just know it's out there as an option.
No, fair enough.
But it's definitely something, again, if you don't want to go through and analyze the stocks, because I love that process of doing that. If you want exposure to small caps, then that's an example of an ETF that you can get involved in and get access with almost zero knowledge. You just have a look at what they're doing, what their previous performance is, and you sort of go from
there. What is their previous performance? I'm looking at high figures there.
It fluctuates. We go back, we're just looking at it now from 95 to 2018, and, it's a massive sort of fluctuation. 2018, it lost 12%.
Yep.
2017, it was up 13%, up 19%, down 5%, up 3%, up 37%, up 14%, down 5%, up 25%, up 25%.
Yeah, okay.
So it really fluctuates because it's...
So that in a nutshell is the small cap sort of scene. Like it is fluctuating. It's so dependent on a number of different factors and maybe on a couple of those companies kind of pushing themselves up or whatever. So that's an interesting one. As a beginner investor, what strategy would you sort of recommend? What would you say... Look, if you're starting out, you've got $1,000. Where would you sort of think you could place it in? And I suppose that also then ties into Phil is the question around, what percentage of your portfolio roughly would you generally work with? And I know it depends on a couple of different things, but roughly depending on if you're active or passive investor.
Yeah. So first thing with $1,000, when you invest that, I want you to find at least an extra $100 a month to keep putting in there.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot harder. To invest $1,000 and have that just grow, because it's just going to go up and down. But if you keep buying that and take advantage of that dollar cost averaging and buying lots more stocks when the market goes down, it's a lot better. So first thing is find more money that you can add to it on a regular basis. And then you can set kind of goals. You might do one. You might say, let's do the S&P 500. I'm going to start with $1,000 to 100 a month. And once that gets to 100,000, I might start again and I might build another one of just small caps to 10,000.
Sure.
And then might do another one that's kind of mid caps in the European market.
Yep.
And then you can kind of build it.
Okay.
Build it that way.
Yeah, right. Okay, no, that's good. That's very helpful. And anything else? Oh, just want to say before we go on, I think the press has been tracking our podcasts because we were talking about the Saudi oil, Saudi Aramco, I think it is, doing an IPO next year. And lo and behold, even news.com.au, which is a sort of a free news site locally in Australia. Even that had a big front page article on the fact that the biggest, $1.5 trillion $1.5 trillion company is going public. Lots of excitement around it. I've no doubt lots of people are going to invest in it.
Yeah.
We're basically saying don't, or at least the more I look into it, the more I realize it's probably not worth the money. But there is a huge amount of things out there. We've actually got a post on our website about it as well with some really good comments. So I just sort of dropped that in. The press is obviously tracking us, Phil. So be careful what you say.
Oh, I assume they are. I'm assuming these phones and everything are...
As always, they're onto us. They're onto
G'day, Zuckerberg. How are you?
Well, no, he covers everything. He's
Tim Cook, you're doing well,
money.
My friend.
Ah, Timmy.
Even though it's not an Apple phone, I'm sure he's listening somewhere.
Ah, Apple, they're everywhere, even when they're not there. So look, to sum everything up, to sort of guide it up, really, I suppose the big question at the end... Is Phil, in your view, ETFs, are they worth having as part of your portfolio? Or are they worth having as a big part of your portfolio, a small part of your portfolio? What's your kind of
sense? Yeah, for sure. If they reflect what you want to do. And again, one of the things we teach is coming back to goals. Like a lot of people just blindly invest and say, okay, I read putting in an ETF, I'm going to do an ETF without setting any goals. So they work really well. If you're kind of hands off, you don't want to do much of the research, but you want returns, chuck $1,000 in, contribute a couple hundred a month, and don't look at it again for 20 years.
Cool. All right. That's great.
Super well.
You know, awesome. Listen, thank you so much for listening. Before we go, we're not mad on pushing for advertising, but we do have an incredible new product that we've launched a little while ago, and it's growing really nicely. It's called Cheeky Edge. And the name doesn't really give much away, but what it is Phil, personally, like he talks about, he's passionate about reviewing stocks, analyzing stocks in a huge amount of detail. He's got all these programs and gizmos to do it. He releases 5 stocks every month that he's personally reviewed, personally assessed. Within there, there's talks about market cap, the value, what's happening with them. It's an incredibly detailed PDF that gets emailed straight to your inbox. It's $25 a month. And the idea is that for anyone that's really interested, really serious about investing, be it a beginner or an expert, this is an incredible tool to have. It basically gives you, it does all the hard work for you. So you're not having to sit down and spend, you know, he's spending hours on each one of these just to figure out.
And to give you some of the ideas of success, right? We had a look a couple of months ago at Tesla, analyzed that, and we found that, I think we said last time, Elon Musk had bought 55 mil worth of stock in that company. Yep. So when they recently went up 25% in a day, everyone's like, wow, we didn't see this coming. But when you do the research, the numbers and the figures are there. It wasn't too surprising to people that are on that newsletter. So cheekyinvestor.com/cheekyedge. 5 hot stocks a month. We go through, I do the discounted cash flow analysis to give you fair value. Have a look at the price to earnings, where it stands in terms of the industry. Have a look at the earnings per share and the growth of the company, the cash flow, their debt. And we also pull together some analysts, some of the top analysts, and see what their forecast is for the stock price. So
well worth getting on. I was on it and you took me off it, so I need to go back onto it, to be honest.
You probably didn't pay.
I'm not going to lie, I actually didn't, to be honest about it. No, that's fair enough. I did the same thing if I was you. But no, honestly, well worth it. So look, there is a link in the description of the podcast if you're interested. Also, go to cheekyinvestor.com, new website. It's really smick, and we've got all the same stuff on there. We're on Facebook, we're really active on Facebook. Lots of chat, lots of comments. We're constantly chatting to people. Phil's great. He's always getting back to people. People have a huge amount of questions. So if you've got any questions about investing, get on there. And of course, as always, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. You guys make it all sort of worthwhile doing it. And we actually really enjoy this. And it's we enjoy getting comments back from people, to be honest. So thank you so much. And keep on listening. We've got a couple more in the run up to Christmas that are going to be really jammy. So make sure you're just clicked in, you've subscribed, is it, on podcast? I don't know how you do it. Anyway, I'm sure you can get a notification. And we'll catch you next week. So thanks for listening.